Welcome inside the coach's room. Every week, we talk to elite coaches and backroom staff about their experiences, how they develop, and how they develop their players.
From that starting point, you already need to take into account that in football, very often, you have to expect the unexpected. And always be prepared what can happen.
Yeah.
And even if you're prepared, you're not prepared enough.
In this episode, we talk to Ariel Jacobs. Ariel Jacobs is a Belgium director of football and a former professional coach. He coached at RSC Anderlecht and FC Copenhagen, and he's currently the director of football at OH Leuven. We discussed the importance of sharing experiences, the difference between current football and football or coaching in the past, and we discussed how coaching can be very tough and very lonely sometimes. Enjoy this episode with the highly experienced Ariel Jacobs. Thank you for having me.
You're welcome. It's a pleasure.
Yeah, it's the pleasure is all mine, because to give an introduction on how we met, I think it's a year and a half ago or something. Yeah,
something like that.
I did webinars, and there was this name, Ariel Jacob, that signed up as a member.
Yeah.
I thought, this is, okay, this is my first assumption here. Huh? That's the old coach from Belgium, right? So I was looking into it, LinkedIn. Yeah, it's him. So why is he signing up for something that we're doing mainly for, let's say, young coaches, ambitious coaches?
So must be crazy.
So I thought, this is interesting. And I think I sent you a message. Okay, what's your impression? You said it was good. And then we started with this group online, with the professional coaches and sometimes amateur coaches. Yeah. I think you were there almost every time.
Almost every time. Sometimes it's getting difficult, although I was not linked straight at that time with any club. But little by little, you also have other duties. So the few times I couldn't be present, which I still regret, because you always can learn from everyone. This has been all the time my motto, and will stay as such. Anyway, I must say that if you were glad to have me amongst them, I'm also glad and grateful, because I think that such organizations allow people, first of all, to meet each other, and in an easy way to learn from each other. Very often, we always talk about small details making a big difference in football. But sometimes you can get small details in such meetings, and that's why it's so interesting.
Yeah. Well, the again, assumption here, but you could say, okay, this coach, he is a 90 or 69 years old. He's been experienced everywhere. Oh, yeah, he has experiences everywhere. You could say, okay, well, he learned enough. But you were, I think, one of the most open coaches in that group, which says something about your eagerness to learn.
Yeah, because I think I'm quite convinced also, and I think it's important for young coaches, that first of all, it's what you learn beyond what you know that makes the difference for you and in a job. Even that, in that situation for me, I was not quite sure to still have a job in some time.
You didn't even know if you were going to take a job, right?
No.
So it just that was
that's passion.
Yeah,
that's passion.
So there was no goal. It was just your curiosity.
Yeah, you can't let it go. And the funny thing is that you get some more time than I had previously, sometimes you dive into some job subjects. And you want to go deeper, and the deeper you go, the more you know that you don't know anything about it.
Yeah.
So that's quite crazy. And very often you put a question to yourself, why am I doing it? what can be the use? Can I still use it or not? But it's such an addiction, such a passion that you keep on doing it. And if, like now, joining a club, my main aim is not to achieve personally anything, but just to try to help and bring people together in a club. And that joins the second my second idea. I've had the luck and the opportunity to work in professional environments and to experience things that you don't find on video, that you don't find in books, that you maybe can find after discussing with some guys and so on, but experiences real life that you can't find anything. And it would be selfish of myself having that and knowing how difficult it is as a young or less young coach to work, not to share that information that I have. That's why I have no secrets. I have these experiences, how I live them, and I won't say that what I tell is the only truth, because there's not one only truth, but I just hope it can help younger coaches.
Yeah, yeah. Well, that you did for sure. And to make it a little funny, sometimes you were there like every, let's say, okay, the contrast here, you look perfectly groomed. Yeah. Your sweater, it matches perfectly with your hair, etc. And there you were like everybody else, hanging on the couch, like we all did.
Yeah.
And just listening and just tapping into and just sharing. And that I think that makes it also made it, I think, interesting for the other ones. So, okay, we are these young, ambitious guys. And like you said, you were willing to share, but you also connected. It was still online, which is not real life, but the connection was there.
Maybe from my side, the only regret I experienced is that you can feel, and maybe it's because it's online, you still can feel some is it fright or keeping apart from younger coaches, maybe being afraid to ask some questions. I had some good results, winning titles and cups and so on, but after all, one of my prides inside is that. And it was not on purpose from the start, of course, because it's so unpredictable a career. But having had the opportunity to work on an amateur level with youth, afterwards on a professional level, then on an international level with national teams up to under 21, making the step to club football in Division 2, going to Division 1, spending most of the time as a coach in Belgium and then still abroad, the impression I have to have covered all the layers that are possible in football without neglecting what you're coming from.
Yeah.
Because that basic, and unfortunately, I think very often it is neglected by many coaches, taking the step right from the player to assistant coach or head coach, but missing not only the possibility to make errors as a youth coach, which is not important at all, but also learning so much of the real practice,
yeah.
How to teach, yeah. How to coach, how to communicate with human beings.
Yeah, I agree. There's I heard a podcast with Pascal Janssen of AZ, who also had a career starting at the bottom, being an amateur coach, working his way, went to the Middle East, everywhere. And now he is one of the celebrated coaches in the Netherlands. Yeah. But he had maybe a comparable career, or I think he also went through all the layers. And what I think is interesting there is that those coaches also experienced how it was to get their own balls from the locker room And if you go from, let's say, an internship as a pro player, moving straight away into the first team, you're no judgment, but you don't get to see that process.
No, you're not aware of that.
No,
and it will be very difficult if you step in right at a top level, having to cope with some real weaknesses in organization or whatsoever. What you can learn previously by coaching younger and less younger players.
Yeah, I agree. You are much more aware what it takes.
Absolutely.
I think you also see more value in what's around you, probably.
Yep.
Which I think you're also a better organizer on and off the pitch if you went through all that that part. Yeah,
because you from that starting point, you already need to take into account that in football, very often, you have to expect the unexpected and always be prepared what can happen.
Yeah.
And even if you're prepared, you're not prepared enough.
Yeah, yeah, true, completely agree. Okay, just to create some context, because we're diving straight into it. We are here in the stadium, King Power Stadium, where to the right of me, to the left of you is the pitch. You just took a job again, which was maybe unexpected for the outside world, but maybe also for you.
Certainly for me too.
Yeah,
and it happened in a quite curious way, not expecting anything anymore. I think it's for myself. I made a reasonable reflection. Football is a sport that is played by young people, maybe coaches and members of a board, members of management are some older, but not of that age. So,
are you the oldest one walking around here?
Absolutely, I can say it without any doubt. I'm not ashamed of that. In a positive way, I can translate it. Maybe having the most experience.
Sure.
Avoiding to have to say how old one is. I didn't expect it at all. At some times, inside of myself, I was feeling a kind of dual way of thinking, saying, I've had the luck, I recall it, I've had the luck, the opportunity to train at several levels. Having some experience, personal experiences you cannot find in books, you cannot hear when a presentation is made by a top coach or any other coach. And you have that. And what can I do with it? How can I help people with it, if they want it at least? And since the stop of my active coaching career, I did some consulting, and I liked it because you feel it gives you such a feeling of satisfaction that you feel that people want to learn, want to go with you, and to increase or to be a better performance,
sure.
Performance in their career. Of course, very often it comes back to one and the same situation. Put it in practice in a club, and I was lucky to have that opportunity. It started, I think, in the month of March, when there was a casual talk with the CEO of the club about the club, the developing club, and so on, the importance of academy, of women football, which is often said but not often put into practice, and so on.
Window dressing.
So, it triggered me. I won't say a little, but certainly a lot. But it stayed on that one occasional talk. Until then, the technical director who was in place was being sacked before summer, and then suddenly after summer, I had a new contact, And I like the story because I could also see in these moments that it was not window dressing, but it was a reality. They had an objective where to end or where to evolve to. But every time it was interrupted by 1 or 2 or 3 months. And then in the end of September, it became more concrete.
Cool.
And I'm very happy for that.
Yeah, and now you're back in the seat again. Yeah. And if I correctly, you're doing it with a group of management, so there's no technical director,
which is
a tendency in football anyway these days. You see more and more clubs not going for a technical director, but more of a management group or a technical heart or whatever, how you want to call it.
I think it's quite obvious. Putting all responsibility, and it's a huge responsibility about the sports policy in general of a club, giving that in the hands of one person. It can work well, it can work in a wrong way. Very often a technical director, and I regret that, is assimilated to the guy who buys and sells plays. And I think there is so much more at stake in a club. A club having, like this club, or Oa Leuven, having its own policy, one and the same policy, sports policy for women, for academy, for under 23, for the first team, coordinating that, trying to help every day to make it even more performant and so on. And not just working in, I would say, two windows in a season.
Sure.
The present window, January, buying, selling players, and the second one in summer.
Yeah. So the probably, if you do it correctly, if I hear it correctly, the vision should be you have a way of working, and the windows should only benefit that style of working, not the other way around. We're not working towards the window because that's the goal.
No. No,
exactly.
We try to install something persistent that we hope makes the club special or different from other ones.
Yeah, clear. Okay, we can go on the current job, but I want to go a little bit back because, like you said, you are a very experienced coach and the sporting director or technical director, whatever it was called previously.
Yeah.
And we are called Inside the Coach's Room for a reason. So I want to start there.
Yeah.
You've been in a lot of dressing rooms. You've managed a lot of dressing rooms. You've managed a lot of coaches' rooms. Looking back, or maybe even here, what is the most important there?
As a coach?
Yeah.
To be aware that in any times, of course, society and football is evolving very quickly the last couple of years. But I think in any time that you're supposed to be the star for fans, for outside world, for media and so on, but in fact you are not, because your stars are your staff, the working people, the staff that you organize, that you monitor, that you help. First and secondly, your players group. They are more important. A player group can play without a coach. Coach cannot coach without a player group.
True.
That's quite obvious. Very often it is forgotten. So I think that determining that from the beginning towards your dressing room, towards your staff, is an important thing. Being able to admit that position. Of course you have a key role, but not the most important one. You decide a lot, and it might seem to be important, but it is not. You're the man behind the scenes. That's, for instance, as a joke, one of the reasons why it hardly interested me to be on pictures after winning a cup or winning a championship. Of course, you need to be on it for the official photo and whatsoever. But we are, as coaches, people behind the scenes. Important in that role, of course, because everything is determined there. But those who do it on the pitch are mainly the players.
Yeah, this is things very interesting, because the first thing that pops up with me is ego.
Yeah.
Because as a coach, you have an every human has an ego. But it's very, you have to be very aware of your role in, if, like you say, that is one of the most important things. So that also means putting your ego aside.
I think that everyone has an ego. That's quite normal.
Yeah. There's nothing harmful in that either.
No, but you know where you start, where you're up to, how you are yourself, and what players and staff can expect of you. That's simple. I think that from day one, when you enter a dressing room, of course you are judged by players who are pre-informed already by what is going on in the media and so on. So you only get one moment to make a good first appearance, and that's then. And it's not by being well-dressed or whatsoever. It's what you say, how much you say or not. Being, in my opinion, of course, the basic item, the basic parameter is competence. But what is competence? Good coach wins? Or is the winner a good coach?
Yeah.
I don't know. Competence is, I think, for any position, the basic the basic element. Secondly, as to me, moreover, I had no big CV experience as a player, top level. I gradually grew as a coach. I think that maybe most important after competence is being authentic, who you are. If you play a role, if you copy others, the copy is never as good as the original one. Yeah. So I might love Guardiola, I might love Conte, I might love any coach. Being that coach, the circumstances, the person, the personality are totally different, so useless to copy. I think getting inspired, I was throughout my career very much inspired, not by one person, either positively or negatively, but I think you should not be ashamed to say, I learned a little bit from that, a little bit from that.
You can be inspired.
Have to. And then after all, make your own idea. Yeah. And after being authentic and keeping being authentic in all the pressure and the roller coaster that football is. Secondly, I think a big part of openness, I always have had the impression that the football world is a special world where rules exist that are not valid anymore once you go outside the stadium.
Can you name an example?
And why should that be the case? Why is a football coach the one who determines everything? He is a part of a chain. He is a fairly important part. He can decide on many things sports-wise. But suddenly, and you see that when a coach signs in a new club, it's God. Why? Yeah. I think there are much more important professional jobs than being a football coach. And sometimes during my career, and if it was not me who said it, it was my wife, she said to me, I have the impression that you work more and you have more responsibilities than, for instance, a head doctor, surgeon in an hospital, than, for instance, the prime minister or whatsoever. And that shows the picture of football. I'm convinced of that also. On the contrary, I think that many coaches think when they sign in a club, okay, now I'm the boss. Yeah. And it's a matter of position, of power. But once you're in, very quickly you're aware that it becomes very fragile also.
Yeah, true. I think the main reason could be that there are a lot of clubs that lack a vision and that a long term, there's always a vision. If you talk to somebody, they can always say, okay, this is what we're standing for, but what is the plan for 5 years, or what's the plan for 10 years?
10 years is long, because I learned that certainly in football, the long term is defined, is determined by the short term. You can have the best plans, really want to achieve them, to realize these plans. They are consistent. But if your first team loses 5 times in a row,
sure.
The atmosphere isn't good. The general feeling of everyone isn't good. You don't make steps forward, and it's difficult to work in the shadow of these results. I won't say that when the results are good, everything runs like it should be, but it helps. It's a kind of fuel that makes
no,
the engine run more in a more easy way.
Yeah, but at the same time, it can also can be blinding, because if you run a company, or if you run a football club, there's like an average position where you probably will end that season, or where you probably will end in the upcoming years. Which, if your average position is 15, it could also be that you relegate, or that you stay on top, or you have a good season. Maybe you're 8 or whatever. I think it's very hard, because there's much more emotion involved.
That's the point. That's a key point.
Yeah. And that's
much of emotion. I've had the occasion in all these years to meet a lot of chairmen or other persons in clubs who are brilliant company bosses.
Yeah.
Who do brilliantly, not with one company, several companies. Organized, structured, efficient.
Visionaries, their long-term strategies, whatever. Yeah.
And these same persons,
shouting at the stands.
When they enter a stadium, they lose their identity. They become so emotional. And everything that we as sportsmen hope they should bring in from outside, from that well-structured environment that are very often companies, hoping that they should bring it in the football world, suddenly they become other people. So emotional. I experienced that, and it's one of the points, the items I'm in my present position I want to focus on, knowing also side of coaches, is the way in which coaches are being signed in clubs. I've experienced it myself.
Based on maybe a profile instead of
even not based on a profile, okay. Simply based on the results achieved.
Yeah, sure. Okay.
The last couple of months, year, a reputation.
I mean,
that a coach might have. I once had a chairman, and he simply asked me, "Are you an offensive or defensive coach?" And I told the chairman, "What will you do if I say that I'm a defensive coach? I won't take you," he said. I said, "So my answer is clear, and I presume, where can I sign?" And 2 minutes later, we signed the contract. Yeah, this is crazy. At that moment, and I'm telling you, time-wise also, how it happens, it lasted in total for 10 minutes. I had another chairman, and that was quite in the beginning, and it was so strange to me, the question he put to me. He was a very clever man. It was so strange to me. I was amazed. I was speechless. And now I understand. He said to me, "We're talking about signing a contract. Everything is well. For you, if we sign, you're happy. If you're doing well, I will be happy too. But how do we quit? If at some time, in some occasion, things are not working, how do we stop?"
Yeah.
And at that time, I was so much younger also, inexperienced. That was so strange to me. That was rather a proof of a lack of trust.
Sure.
I said, before signing a contract, already talking, how should we split if it ever comes to that way? And in fact, in the couple of times I was being sacked, this is a very important moment, because it's, I think, for both parties a difficult moment. It's on the one hand from the club admitting that they made maybe an error, and from the coach also that he was working in the wrong way or making the wrong choice with the club or whatsoever. But your biggest problem began at that time, leaving each other in, I wouldn't say in the best terms, but in a decent way, where the match didn't take place,
sure,
but where you can say, okay, everything went in a correct way.
Yeah.
So these are little anecdotes I'm keeping in mind, because being involved in a process of attracting new players first, in the longer term, discussing with a present coach or with another coach about a new coaching position. I learned from the past that this should take place in a more professional way.
Yeah, and it's part of the business.
It's part of the business, and of course, it's not when having a good talk that both parties knows exactly from each other what they can expect, that there won't be any problems. That must be clear. But I think it makes things a little more clear for both parties involved.
Yeah. No, I think, yeah, I completely agree. If you sign some contract for anything, whether it's a house or a kitchen or a TV, whatever, you know the deal.
Yeah.
You know, if something goes wrong with the kitchen or with my oven, this is my warranty and this is what these are my rights, whatever.
But this is what still triggers me when we were speaking about successful businessmen who lead companies, who lead also a football club, how demanding they are towards CEOs they have to appoint, other senior staff members. And then suddenly in football, there is something they think, this is the one who can help us without going through the processes like they do in business.
Should you as coach then take control of that process? Because even now, not only in professional football you have a contract, but semi-professional or amateur clubs, you also maybe as a youth coach you get a small fee, or and it's the same. Yeah. I heard, actually, it's interesting, one of the best amateur clubs in the Netherlands that ranked number one, they already fired a youth coach after half a year. We're talking about an amateur club.
Yeah.
So even those guys, they all those coaches think they have the ambition to work as high as possible. So even then you have to think, okay, well, how does this work? It's like a job. So
it's like a job, even though it's not, I would say, a full-time job. But I think that nowadays your club should have a vision. If you have that vision, secondly, does anyone is fitting well in that vision to work in the same way, to have the same attitude we are standing for as a club? I think that if you make an investigation prior to signing these coaches, you're already informed and you have doubts or not, which doesn't mean that throughout the season you can't see other things.
Sure.
You can never predict that, of course. But being well informed on beforehand, in my opinion, is a very important starting point.
Yeah, I think for both ends.
Yeah,
for both. Also for the coach, what type of manager is it?
Yeah.
Is he going to invest in me, or is it the result-oriented guy, whatever? Yeah. What's the club culture? And then you have to put your enthusiasm to the side, because, oh, yeah, it looks amazing. Okay, take two steps back. What am I stepping into? I think is an important process as well.
It has to be a rational process. Put enthusiasm aside and put that emotional, although football is one and all emotion, put that on the side also.
Yeah. Okay, agree. I want to go, because you kind of already mentioned it, that we can go back to the dressing room or the coach's room later, but that the current way of thinking is changing also in society. And well, to put it in a rude way, you can ask an old guy. No, I'm joking, but an experienced guy, the best question that you can ask is, what is the difference between the past and now? And when I prepared that question, I was also thinking, it got me thinking also about, let's say, the vulnerability of people at this point, and which you also see in football.
Well, first of all, talking about vulnerability, when I said earlier, when you first contacts with your dressing room or later contacts, I think competence, being authentic, secondly, and remaining authentic, but thirdly, it doesn't make your job easier, but we all people are vulnerable. Why is a coach not vulnerable?
Sure.
Admitting that in sometimes, even if you won, if it had to be done again, that you would do it differently. Because I always hope that showing that you're vulnerable, that players can, I won't say attack me, but can argue on some points, challenge, yeah. That you have to take into account what they say. And this leads us to the next. As an older guy, I would say everything was better formerly.
I'm not saying you're old.
No. I say it by myself. everything was better. That's usual. Yeah. Or 10 years ago, 20 years ago, 30 years ago, when I was young, we didn't have all this mess of now. No. I'm quite sure that my parents, when I was so much younger, also had the impression, what's he doing now? In our time, when we were young,
sure,
we wouldn't have done
that.
I think that's an eternal repetition going over generation. But there's a huge difference. When I started my career, I had the impression, as a coach, you are the boss. It's not you that wants to be the boss. Your players were expecting that of you.
Sure. Yeah.
They were there. They were silent.
They were waiting to be led.
They were waiting to be led. He's the boss. He decides. We do. We try to do. We want or not do what he wants us to do. But it was clear from the beginning that was expected of you. I think that coaches who of an older generation who are still in business now might have a relationship problem about that with their players. Because nowadays, you're less a boss as a coach, but more the leader. Formerly, you were responsible for your player group, make them perform, results, quality of performance, and development, improvement of players. Nowadays, you have very often a bigger group of players,
yeah,
and secondly, a huge staff. I've been used to work with a staff of 5 or 6 persons, which is easy to lead. When I went to Anderlecht, it was suddenly a staff of 25 people. All, in my opinion, as important, the one towards the other. So you already spend a lot of time and energy in leading that. That's why I'm saying not coaching or whatsoever. It's really, it's leading, it's helping, it's facilitating. As to a staff, it's delegating, which is for many coaches, having an ego, not easy. They delegate, but it doesn't mean, look, that's your job and come and see me in 1 week when it's over. And then I say it's good or not. No, when you delegate, first of all, you should know what you delegate to whom. And secondly, you're there, as I say, facilitator, helping hand, monitor. You're there to help your people in that process, because we all have or supposed to have one common goal.
Yeah.
And in fact, the same process is towards your players.
Yeah.
If you dictate the most easy decision as a coach that you can take is you have to accept that put you on the bench because we are professional. When you examine that, that doesn't mean anything. We're professional, so you have to accept anything. Today we train 5 times a day. We train 7 days a week. This is over. I think that if you adopt such an attitude at any level, full professionals, semi-professionals, amateur, youth, I think this is impossible anymore. You have to take into account to have a match with your team, with your player, and of course with your staff. That's a huge difference.
Yeah. No, and it's also not the way that players are brought up anymore. They are, in almost any academy, they are responsible for their own trajectory. They know, or they are, can choose what they want to improve. And this is the kind, it's kind of installed in their performance behavior. So they know that they are responsible. It would be very strange if then a coach comes in and now you do what I say. It doesn't work like that anymore.
It doesn't work like that anymore. I think that if you still work like that, you sign your own death. On the other hand, I have the impression that we're in the middle of it and in the middle of the process of putting it to the extreme, really giving all the keys in the hands of the players. And I think, fear even, that this might be a little too far.
I completely
agree. We call it ownership. I agree on ownership. And in these cases where the player is able, in the widest sense of the word, to assume that ownership and really knows that he has to work for improving, for becoming better, to reach a certain level and so on, that's okay, but not all are as such. So full ownership, I really don't believe in it, because even present youth still needs that sometimes that hand to help them walking.
Yeah. My feeling on this is, I have 2 young kids myself, that the tendency in current society is to create the ultimate safest place where they can do everything themselves. Yeah. So there are no sharp corners on any table anymore, because then they can walk themselves. We in football clubs, we do the same. We provide them with everything, so they can do it themselves. So it's almost, padding everything. So nothing can go wrong, but they can do it themselves.
And I'll tell you one contradiction, according to what you said. And it's an important one. And it's one I'm really faced again with on a daily basis. I think all over the world, football clubs, professional football clubs, tend to be more and more professional as to youth. Because they feel it as a necessity,
sure,
for themselves, but certainly towards a competition. If the competitors, if we don't do it, they will do it and we lose our players. And that's quite obvious. And so what do? We surround them with experts. We look for the best combination between going to school and still being able to practice on,
sure,
a professional level. We go and get them with small buses and so many other things. And when you look at those players who become successful football players, from which environment do they often come?
They come from
an environment where, of course, they worked for it, but we surrounded them extra with maybe too many things, or the ones who, when they were smaller or grown-up kids, had to fight.
Yeah.
I've had one example, and he didn't talk to it while I had him as a player when he was 16. That's Romelu Lukaku.
Yeah.
I think that he was really ashamed to tell about his youth in the so many talks we had, not about football, because he was a child of 16.
Yeah.
He didn't look as such.
Looked like a man already.
Yeah, but I mean, this was very often a wrong impression that people got. Sure. They were not thinking about the small boy that he really was. I remember from one anecdote to another that when he was 17 and he practically didn't dare to come to see me, it was his last year in school, and there was a three-day trip, school trip organized abroad, England and Chelsea.
Sure.
But I mean, it was the last time he could do it with his friends, but he was not yet a professional player, but he played for the first team of Anderlecht. And in his opinion, this couldn't match. I said to him, you have to go. Not as a football player, but the child that he still is. And Romelu, in the many talks we had, and as I said, not football linked, he never talked about the difficult situation he had experienced as a young guy with his family. I can understand that now. And even afterwards, when we talked to each other on the phone, I don't want to come back on that. But I think that his motivation, his will, his willpower to, not forced, but to have an ambition to say, I want to become a professional, but not a simple professional player. I want to reach top, and I will do everything for that, might mainly come from the fact that he knew what reality of life is.
Yeah. Well, I completely agree. And I think that we are trying to, in some way, simulate that. Okay, we create everything so they can fight themselves, which is, in my opinion, also leads to players, young players, or that if they are actually challenged by either a coach or their environment, then they realize for the first time what challenging is, which means they look competent, which means it looks that they can fight, but they never haven't ever really been in such a situation. You cannot fake it.
You know that after years of fight in Belgium, we finally, for the first time this season, introduced an under 23 team being able to play in senior competition. Four teams are playing on a professional in a professional league, being the second best league. Eight other teams are playing in the highest amateur and second amateur. And suddenly, the big thoughts still remain about having developed players from the age of, let's say, 6, 7, 8 to 18, 19 years in a, I would say, positive way, and having to wait until the age of 19, 20 or even more to put them in the reality of the game. And suddenly see that so many players who were supposed to be developed for the professional level, suddenly it stops there because they faced for the first time in their life, in their career, with what football is in reality. Football is more than saying to the goalkeeper, we build up from the back, we want 200 touches on our own half, and then we go to the next step and so on. Suddenly you have a pressure that you never were facing in youth teams, and an opponent that says, if he dribbles me, I'll kill him.
Yeah, because you're literally taking my money.
Yeah,
literally.
Of course, yeah, of course. Yeah. And you play for the first time also, and that's why it's learnful for these players and for the clubs. For the first time also, they're playing against guys who are not same height, same speed or whatsoever, but who have much more maturity than them.
Yeah.
So it's quite crazy. We have to wait for such a long time. And the question should always be put, the way in which we are developing, and we believe in that, of course, and we have that element of, if we don't do it, our competitors will do it, and so we lose players. That's a reality.
Yeah.
But is it really the best way?
Yeah, I tend to agree. You see it everywhere in school as well. Yeah.
No, it's not linked to one country, to one region. It's everywhere in professional world.
Yeah.
I'm quite sure that in some countries not, we should say. I'm still always amazed when I see the productivity of a small country like Portugal. I'm still amazed about productivity of a small country like Croatia, who succeed in, after generations, still putting together a team that is a competitor at top level.
Yeah, I think the main difference there is that I think what we were discussing before is, let's say, strong Western countries, Northern Europe, Belgium, Germany. I don't know, Germany's a little bit more disciplined, it's my feeling, but richer countries, Portugal and Croatia, don't have that strong economy. Oh, so it's a different society.
Yeah.
So it brings in different mentalities, which you see in sports. And again...
And I think in these countries, it can seem funny that we say that, but I shouldn't call them young football players, but young kids have a natural opportunity to play football before they are being trained. So they can fall back. I don't like, once again, to talk about that because it's about my youth and that's so many wars ago.
Sure.
But we had the opportunity to play without any stress, to really play as long as we wanted. And now we train twice a day, from 10 to 11:30 and from 5 to 6:30 or whatsoever. It's compulsory. We have to do that and so on. And the spontaneous way in which it happened formally, without any limitation, without coaches, parents and others, allows young kids to develop themselves and to see where their real level is.
Yeah.
And it's very often a little more artificial.
Yeah, true. Because on the streets or whatever with your friends, there is nobody telling you the rules. The strongest one is the best one.
Yeah.
And you kind of have to find a way to deal with it.
Yeah. Yeah.
And if you fall on the streets, nobody's going to pick you up.
No,
if you start crying, you're gone.
Yeah. Absolutely. They leave you nowadays. And that's one of the many points that make me angry. When you see, for instance, a youth game at any age, a player falling on the ground for any reason, and I'm not talking about these obvious, really obvious injuries.
Sure.
But in a one versus one, a player is falling on the ground, and suddenly everything stops. Referee stops the game. Assistance from the bench needs to come and whatsoever. For what? And translated to the boy, how can he put his pain limit or give it a higher level than it was, which formerly we had to learn automatically because no one was helping us. We fell on the ground. We were very often insulted by our teammates because the team was one or two players down, and automatically you felt ashamed. You stood up and you start limping first, and secondly, you went on playing.
Yeah.
That's simple.
Yeah.
You learn from yourself and from each other.
It's everywhere. I'm thinking about my kids again, because I'm not saying I'm doing it right, but if you're playing with all kinds of kids, as a parent, you're sitting down watching it and somebody falls, five parents stand up, blah, blah.
And
when you, I fairly can say, I just leave it. If he doesn't stand up, then we have a real problem.
Yeah.
Because then probably he's really hurt.
The problem is that if you don't react, you get all these people looking at you and saying, that's a father or the mother, and they don't react, or is it possible? And you have a conviction from yourself that when you talk about, how would I say, giving more responsibility to the child, he should little by little learn that, am I really feeling pain, or is it a pain that is, I'm not talking about fake, but a normal pain in football where you have a lot of contact.
Sure, sure. No, I completely agree. And now my kids, when they fall and they look at me, you know, like, and if I don't reply, they just stand up. Sometimes I even laugh because it's a funny situation. Yeah. And
that's the best experience.
It's completely different. Yeah. But yeah, it's very interesting. It says something about if you are always picked up and then the coach doesn't pick you up, whatever.
Yeah.
This is not the right atmosphere, or I don't feel safe here. And that's kind of what you're seeing now as well as football. We did a podcast with Ellison Anon, one of the best hockey coaches out there. She's Australian. She was one of the toughest players ever, but she was also the best player in the world when she was playing. So you cannot say she doesn't know what she's talking about. But she did. She won all the trophies with the national team. The women's team won Olympic gold. But she was still, let's say, connected to the way that she was raised as a player. And that was her norm. And then, now she got fired last January because she wasn't creating a safe environment. People were feeling pressured too much. Because as coaches nowadays, you're tiptoeing. If you challenge a player, let's say maybe mentally, or you push them over their edge, it's almost not allowed anymore. I think you said, I fear this, but I agree. We're becoming soft. Coaches, sorry for the interruption. Besides the coaches room, I run another company called Football Tours. This is a full service touring company, and we organize pre-season and winter training camps for professional football teams. We do this for both senior and youth teams, and we take care of everything. Hotel, training accommodation, friendly matches, whatever you need. We give youth teams the opportunity to train at the best youth academies of the Netherlands. Academies like PSV, Feyenoord, AZ Alkmaar and the KNVB, you can train there with your team. So, if you are a professional coach, you need to organize your training camp, or if you have a youth team and you want to train at the best facilities and the best academies of the Netherlands, go to footballtours.com. And now pay attention, tours is with a Z. So, footballtours.com.
You must know that I, as a football man, I'm more than a little bit jealous about hockey, and not hockey as a sport as such, but the mentality, the mindset that is present in hockey. And very often I hear people say we should learn from that and whatsoever, but they have over the years built up such a good culture that I hardly feel is possible to translate into football. When I see, for instance, in hockey, talking about that, the quietness when there is a VAR moment, how it occurs, and you compare that to football, where you have people who are so in a hurry, who want to have the decision right on, who don't allow, you see the referee pushing away everyone and so on. In hockey, everyone can hear how the communication between the VAR and the referee takes place, what they're talking about. And if it's negative towards me and towards my team, I will be disappointed, but I won't have any negative reaction.
No.
Can you imagine having that in football?
No,
it's impossible.
No.
It's impossible.
Yeah. No. Yesterday I was talking to another guy, and he's the throwing coach. I don't know if you know him.
Yeah. Mark Grunemark.
Yeah. And he was also saying the way that we deal with decisions on the pitch is absolutely ridiculous. And we're the only sport, I think, where it is.
Yeah.
Because I cannot think of any other sport where they go into so much discussions. It's unbelievable.
We always talk about having a culture in a sports, culture in a club and so on. But this is a bad culture that football always has known, and I don't think it will get rid of it.
No, he said the only way you can deal with it is just put up yellows, and then you will finish games with seven. But until you don't, if you don't do it, people will still find the freedom.
Yep.
We all know the best Barcelona team from the past years was also the team that whined the most at the referee. Unbelievable.
Yep.
It's a tendency in football. Only rule makers can change it, and then the culture will change.
Yep, that's right.
Yeah. Okay. I want to take... Well, we heard a lot about your ideas on all kinds of things, but I want to go into important experiences with you. And I always ask the guest that I'm talking to, okay, what was your darkest hour as a coach? But more importantly, what was the main lesson that you took from it? And I can imagine you have a lot of ups and downs. No, ups and downs, because you had a lot of successes, but you were also fired several times.
Yeah.
You've been in several positions. You've been in football very long. So there must be lessons there.
A lot.
Yeah.
A lot. Maybe you don't realize it as a lesson at the moment itself.
Sure.
That's why I started, but I did it too late. You should take some small notes day by day, because very often, you know, football doesn't have an history and we forget very quickly. So in the end, if you overcome one or several problems inside of yourself and with those who achieved it, you are quite proud of it. But if you don't take note of everything you went through, you forget some stages. Sure. And of course, having problems with one or several players, having bad result, bad performances, having media turning against you, having crowd turning against you, and so on, is a very tough, difficult period. I've always considered everyone taking part in the whole football story, first treating them as human beings that became football players afterwards. And I think that even those who say, who get never intimidated by anything that happens, I don't believe them. Because you still have that human aspect and it affects you. Most important is how you take it, what you do with it, and how you do it. Do you do it on your own? Do you do it with your staff and whatsoever? Sometimes things can be very hard. It's maybe a coincidence, and I told the same story yesterday in a meeting here in the club. The very first time that this club went to first division was, I think, 12 years ago. It was my last season as a coach of Anderlecht, and we played our first game here, and we lost in the very first minute, in the very last minute, 2-1. Which is, for the bigger Anderlecht against a smaller team, impossible. Few transfers were made and whatsoever. We were leading 0-1. And in the first half, we got a penalty. It was missed by Romelu Lukaku. It could have been 0-2. We had a player sent off. Everything was so negative. I heard after the game that Romelu was going to sign for Chelsea. Then, of course, you get that question at the press conference. Did you know that? Didn't you know it? If there was doubt, should he be the one who took that penalty and so on? That's, of course, afterward. Confronted with that, I remember leaving the dressing room and you had supporters of Anderlecht there shouting only one thing, coach out, Jacobs out, and so on. And honestly, you can understand. On the one hand, it's not logical, but it's reality of the job. And I remember having given players 2 days off to make them really not come back the day afterwards and seeing the same faces, being confronted with the problem that we knew and so on. I said, first of all, when we talk about making your mind empty, the only thing is leave it that way. We have one regular week afterwards, time enough to just check if these heads are so-called empty, and then build up to the rest of the week and the weekend. And in these 2 days, what I did is go in my bed and try to shut your eyes and forget everything. My way of making the head empty. And still, you are a wreck after 2 days standing up. But I said to myself, I'm injured. Internally, it is tough, but that's not the guy who will come into the dressing room when you will ask them, okay, stand up and fight. The first one who has to show it is you. Not with big words. We're all responsible for what happened. The main responsible being also always the coach. You have to admit it. It's unfair. It's hard and whatsoever. But if you don't accept, I won't say that reality, but that fact from history, you shouldn't be a coach in football. You shouldn't take place. You shouldn't have a place in football. So you have to accept that and all consequences. Consequences are not always or not often that good ones. Coaching is in fact a very, in my opinion, a very bad and negative job.
Yeah, agree.
Because when a team plays well, when a player plays well, a good message for me always doesn't have to come from the coach. You say to the assistant, look, go and say, I was pleased with the performance, he did well, and whatsoever. But if you have to tell a player he's not playing, if you have to tell a player, look, come in my room and let's take a look at the footage of last weekend, you do it. Not nice. So it takes a lot of energy, a lot of energy. And sometimes, like these 2 days, I can't describe it, but you're empty. There's nothing in you. And you come in front of your group, and you know that next week you shouldn't win, but you have to win.
I think it is a comparable discussion, exactly what I had with Alison.
Yeah.
Because it is same, almost same context. So you're talking with elite players, elite pressure. And then you are the only one not the only one, but you are the one that is attacked and not...
But you have to accept it.
Yeah, sure.
I repeat it. It can't be an excuse. I must say it is often said that, and I confirm it, a coach never wins a game. The coach loses the game. Players win a game. Sounds stupid, reality. Accept it. That's why you are not the star. If you win, on the back. If you lose, you're responsible. Yeah. Don't run behind and hide.
No.
Feeling empty, powerless, not knowing what should happen. But little by little, still drawing a plan to try to make it better for next weekend. So a coach loses games. The team always wins the games. It is often said that after a game, a coach feels alone. This is really, really, really reality. I've had that impression. Luckily, not too much, but is so. And when I say impression, I still don't know if it's reality. I hope not. But I've had times after the game, you start thinking about your post-game, the next steps, the next days, and so on. that always works in your mind. In the meantime, your staff, and they work with you. They believe in you. They want to help you. For any reason, they quit. They go that side, and literally becomes what I say is a kind of an image, but that image becomes truth. You're sitting there when you lose, all alone.
I think every...
But I'm not blaming.
No.
I accepted it. And you have to accept it as a coach. But people can't imagine how deep you can be.
No, it's
how deep.
It's literally what we discussed last week. It is the hardest thing of being a coach. And I don't think a lot of people realize this. Because you are the coach, you have a very good paycheck.
Yeah.
You are the boss, so you know how to deal with this. That's, let's say, the outside impression. I'm not saying everybody. But once you're in the position, because there's not really anybody at that point that you can relate to within your football context, because the people around above you.
Even though you would have one, he's not feeling the same as you.
True. Or they have different responsibility.
No, or even if you feel, because when I say I was alone, yes, but still you have people who come and sit with you, but you see that you want to be helped, and on the other hand you think, just leave me alone. Just leave me alone. Let me think, you think, we put our ideas together for the next steps and so on. This is an incredible feeling. And I think, like many coaches, we all want to sit on that bench, in that dugout, because it's nice, it's passion, we love it, trying to win, developing a team, developing players, and so on. And so many times when you're sitting there, what the fuck am I doing here? What am I doing here? So you hate it, and you love it.
It's an addiction.
Yeah, but... When you sit on the bench, you want to sit in the stands and say, oh, look at a nice game, because I love football. I love to come and watch the game. And once you're sitting there, you say, oh, Jesus.
But there is one thing I've learned from my coaching career there, which kind of relates to this, in that you you have to push yourself to be aware of the good moments. Because when I was coaching, and you score a goal, or you scored a goal in a great attack, for me, when I was coaching, I was hardly cheering, because this was what I coached all week. This is my play. This is normal.
And there's only one person always already looking at the next step, the next day, the next game. And that's the coach.
Yeah, but if it takes the joy out of your work, if you don't stop at that moment for maybe 3 seconds. Maybe you have that, you can relate, but now looking back, I should have enjoyed some things more.
Of course.
So to everybody that's listening, if you're doing well, you have to stop the time, stop your thinking process. And maybe, even though it's 5 seconds, those 5 seconds, they'll come back.
I can show you a text, a message I sent to Karl Hufkens, former coach of Club Bruges, when they won unexpectedly in Porto, I think, 0-4, which is an incredible and unbelievable result. And I said to him, knowing him from the pro license courses where I'm mentoring and teaching, and I wrote him the message, very good, super win. And that happens on a Tuesday or a Wednesday, and you know you have the next game next weekend. But take time to enjoy a little bit. And he answered me, as a young coach, will it be difficult preparing next game and so on? So that's a process we all go through. And I sent that end of October, and everything went so well, and he was sacked in December.
Yeah.
And of course, one of the things he will have learned of that, indeed, I should have not celebrating or whatsoever, but be proud of what was achieved by players, your coaching, and your staff, with everyone involved, for some times.
And also be proud on yourself a little. Sure.
But don't show that.
That's something different.
Because you're judged. The perception goes then that you want to put yourself forward.
Sure, I agree.
But inside, you need to have that.
You need to allow that. Yeah.
You need to allow that. Yeah. And I think that that's an error that many coaches make, and you work from week to week. So when I said earlier, coaching is a negative job. When you win, you don't think about it because you prepare next game and you see strength and you see weaknesses and threats. And when you lose, you're in a bad mood and you have to prepare next one because once again, you have weaknesses, strengths and threats. So it's always, you don't give yourself any moment of rest. And that's so important.
Yeah.
If I dare to say from myself, I was always involved 200%. But I always tried very quickly to take distance from today. And that helped me a lot. Winning or losing? Trying, I said trying, it's not always possible. When I tell you that during 2 days I went to my bed, sometimes you fall asleep, sometimes not. You want to flee away from reality. That's the only thing. When you come out, you have people who speak to you and say what was happening and so on. So you're permanently confronted with that. An error that I also made in the beginning, my wife still says afterwards also, is that you bring in your bad mood at home. But when leaving the stadium, when entering your home, you can't say, I take it off and I leave it away. Major error. In the end, it went some better because I said, what's the responsibility of those I have here in the fact that we lost? But still, I couldn't afford to have some laughter sitting on the table, eating together or whatsoever, because my mind was not there. Even though if you win, you're in a better mood, but you already think about what's coming next week.
Yeah, it's recognizable. Crazy. For sure. Crazy. Yeah, it takes up every thought process in your head. Yep. Are you relaxing in the shower? And when you relax, new ideas pop up. And then you are start thinking about football, or you are aware that you have to make that phone call, or whatever. It's always on.
I listened to your podcast with Guus Hiddink. What a greatness in football. And I was honored to hear a small detail. When he was coaching, after some time, he went to bed with pen and paper to write some things. I said earlier, I was inspired by a lot of people. This was not an inspiration, but in the beginning, I was trying to feel to fall asleep, and suddenly I had an idea. And I said, oh, no problem. Tomorrow morning, I'll remember. And in the morning, I woke up. Suddenly, I didn't think about that because it went away. But then later in the week, I said, oh, Jesus, I remember. So it won't happen anymore. No. And every time, and still now, go to bed with pen and paper beside the bed.
Yeah,
it's crazy.
Yeah, I do the same.
You think about it, it's crazy. But yeah, it's part of it.
Yeah. Well, in coaching, but also in business or whatever, I just sent myself an email.
Yeah.
Okay, this is, otherwise it's gone.
Yeah. But in fact, if you think about it and the whole process, that's fairly creepy and incredible.
Yeah. Yeah. I said in the other episode, I haven't experienced it on elite level, but was semi-professional level. But still, the process is almost exactly the same. Yeah. There's a difference in pressure and attention, but I can imagine that even ambitious U17 coaches have this process. You're always
They should have that.
They should, because it's also part of why you are successful.
Yeah, yeah.
Because in your head you spend 100 hours a week, so that
having that willpower to be as involved as should be.
But now knowing what it also, and you probably can relate as well, you have to be aware of the environment, because it's the same with if you're in a situation with young kids that I was when I was just becoming head coach, just from my first baby, you miss a lot of moments. Those moments don't come back. So you have to find a way to separate. If you can't, it's going to lead to problems wherever, maybe yourself, your wife, whatever. It is essential that you find a way to deal with it.
That's a very complex question, but appropriate. My life is not a life, but a football life. That's my fault. Maybe if you, I don't talk about being successful or not, but if you want to make a coaching career, and maybe it's the same in politics. I don't have respect for very often what politicians say and do, but
the
intensity of life.
Sure.
These people should not have family. They should not have family. I shouldn't have had family if I wanted to make career. No, not make career. If I wanted to have a coaching career.
Sure, I understand.
You need to have, and I forgot it. I must honestly say that. I forgot it for so many years, and it's only when it's finished that you realize it and that you say it. And it makes me ashamed. If your wife and family and kids don't allow you to do what in fact you love to do, it's impossible.
Yeah.
You're not aware of that during. I have 3 children. They have, so in total, 6 what we call in Belgium communes. That means at the age of, 8 or 9 or 12.
It's a religious thing, right?
Religious thing.
Yeah.
It's a ceremony and whatsoever.
Sure.
I was present on 1 of the 6 in total. I never put any question besides that. At home, they never did, because it was so obvious, even though it was during the week, either it was a training session or a game or whatsoever, it was normal. I didn't know that it happened. Afterwards, they told me what happened and so on, but it's quite normal. And it's a choice you make, but those people suffering most from your choice are your closely related ones. Problem is, I personally, and that's an advice I can give to younger people, be aware of that when you're young. And if you can do it, if you're allowed to do it, be grateful towards those who allow you to do it.
Yeah.
I've experienced that best when I was in Denmark. First time I went abroad, my wife had a shop, so she wanted to stay. I was happy with that, because I knew at that moment that she was busy also, but you're alone. So instead of working, I would say 15, 16 hours a day, at that time, you wake up in the morning and you go sleep at whatever time. There, for the first time, people told me, which is important in Scandinavian countries, beware the balance work-life.
Yeah.
They told me, and even at that age, I didn't accept it. I was sitting there, what could I do? Go out, it's winter and whatsoever. No. When you take some distance from the reality, from the daily practice, you start realizing that. And of course, would I still do it if it was to be done all over again? I would say yes, because maybe there were more lesser bad moments than good ones, but these good ones compensate all the other ones. And it's worthwhile.
Yeah.
It's worthwhile. It's a passion, so it's always worthwhile.
Yeah, no, I agree. And there's also
a balance. In a balance doesn't have to be 50-50 or doesn't have to equal or something. No. There's also also people that can find a balance in working 80 hours a week and being very happy and being the best dad because they're happy in what they're doing. If you find a forced balance that you have to be at home at dinner all the time.
It's not looking for the 50-50. No. Not at all. Very often, I think that an 80% job and 20%, if that is respected, and you feel that yourself and your family are pleased, are happy with that, and it keeps the good spirit, that's so important.
Yeah, true. Besides coaching, I have a company and this platform. Yeah, that means a lot of work.
Yeah.
So after dinner, when the kids go to bed, the laptop goes open. I work from 8 to 10 every day. My wife doesn't expect anything, but she knows if I don't do it, I'm out of balance. So, which means the hour balance is that, let's say after dinner and the kid, I do, my balance is also that I want to be there for the kids because I think that is important. But that's my balance. But she has an ambitious job as well. So sometimes she's there next to me. Yeah.
You know that for fulfilling yourself, and not talking about your ambition, but simply your own personality, you will be missing a lot. And once again, it's very often the choice of the person.
Yeah.
Those who want still to, I would say, have their main job, but besides too much of the rest, sooner or later, they will be in a bad position.
Yeah.
That's a conscious choice you have to make.
Yeah.
To make.
Yeah. You have to make choices, sacrifice.
And not regret afterwards.
True.
Because very often afterwards, if you get some time to think over again what you've done, what you should have done, what you should not have done, and so on. Yeah, very often you see more the weaknesses than strength and so on. You have to be aware that and no pity at all, never.
Agree. This morning when I woke up at 6:30, stepped into the car at 7 because there was snow. I'll have to drive to the snow all the way from the Netherlands to Belgium. But there's no regret there because I think this was an amazing discussion. I'm going to ask you the last question, though. You're not ready. But I think you gave us, we ended in a pretty personal way, but I think you gave us great insights in the way that you have approached football. We didn't go into too technical details or whatever, but I really like the way that you shared how you dealt with the football world and how you...
Do I still have 2 minutes?
You have 10 minutes.
Because the question you're putting or the remark you're making, in fact, can be compared a little bit how I experienced football in the beginning as a younger coach. You know, all young coaches full of energy and maybe like Mourinho, he wasn't coach yet at that moment. But saying I'll invent or reinvent football. I think that all coaches, and that's normal, that's human. Okay, where should we start? What I advise now in the pro license to any young coach: don't buy books, and I have nothing against authors. Don't buy video and so on. Rely on what you see. And what you want. What you want is the way in which you want that your team plays football. And secondly, your game. What should we improve? What should we confirm? And so on. So that's the only reality. I didn't accept it when I was young. And I presume, and it's quite normal, younger coach and don't accept it. And sometimes you say, okay, we'll try to make them better technically. Okay. Does that help? is that revolutionary? And then you say, oh, very often the difference is made from the physical point of view. And at that time, I started as a non-physical man. I started studying, because it was quite famous, the School of Dijon in France. Committee was the brain of the Italian physical coaches and so on. Holland. Sometimes they talk about a cycle of 2 weeks, others 3 weeks, 4 weeks, 5 weeks, 6 weeks. Where is the link? No link. I'm too stupid for that. That's not my job. Is there a win to do? Yes, maybe, but I won't do it. And then we come to the tactical. And you start thinking what is possible. You start thinking PlayStation-wise and whatsoever. And very soon you say, look, 100 years ago they played 11 versus 11. We now play. You can play 1, 10. You can play 1, 4, 3, 2, 1, and so on. But in the end, reinventing football in that way isn't impossible. And then suddenly, and that was already in my senior active coaching career, where the difference can be made is, first of all, the individual. And once you get that, how can we make individuals work together? And which are the dynamics of a group? Dynamics not only in the positive way, you have problems in group, how can we solve that? And then I said, maybe I can read that in books. And then you start digging there and you see that, not that I know everything, but what is written is very often what you already know. And the only thing is, you go to a conference, you talk individually to more famous or less famous coaches who want to share their experiences, talk about that and whatsoever. Sorry. And after that time, I'm still convinced in present football, as I said earlier, for a coach, you need competence. Competence for a football player means technical, tactical ability and physical one. But they can be as good as they want if you're not surrounding that by an individual mindset fitting in a group dynamics, you're lost. And I still believe that players, and I also am fond of looking at technically nice players, but if basically you don't have the individual mindset fitting, because individual mindset, you're working in a team sports. So it's not only the individual. Individual mindset fitting in a team dynamics, knowing that although my mindset is the best and I'm well performing, I need to play in a team. Those two elements are for me starting and ending elements. And all the rest, your core business, playing football and preparing for football, in between, comes on the second place.
Yeah, agree. But
it took some time to realize that, but this is mind control. And that's why, in the end, that's why I'm attending. I'm not expecting in the podcast I'm hearing to hear anyone talk about reinventing a new formation, being 1-2-3-7-1 or whatsoever. Sure. But even though a youth coach, talking about experiences when coaching young players, or experienced coaches like Guus Hiddink, sometimes it's only one word, one sentence. I say, that's it.
Yeah. And but you found it out in your own process. But I also believe, and I think you agree, that every coach all still needs to go through that process first.
Yeah.
As well,
because for themselves.
Because if you say, yeah, you only have to, you leave the rest, focus on this. They first have to find out that they have to focus on that. They have
but
to.
I must say that in my beginning years as a coach, in general, focus was being put on the tactical
true,
and the physical.
True.
And you step into that.
True.
When I see now in pro license courses that in my opinion, we still put too much emphasis and focus on how to prepare a game, analyzing the opponent, preparing training sessions according to how can we beat him and so on. And that processes how players are feeling individually and how my team is feeling is very often still forgotten.
Oh, I agree. I haven't been in course for a while. I think you've been more recent. But no, there was none of this when I did my UEFA B.
No,
so
none. No.
It's only...
And still, I think it's becoming more and more important.
That's true, true. I think we can go for hours.
Yeah. Luckily.
Yeah, but we should do it again. Then let's say, let's hear what feedback we get and then move on to a next session. Because I think, like I said, I really enjoyed and enjoy the way you talk, and we can go on for hours. But I'm gonna ask you the last question, and that's, you've already named some names before we started recording.
Yeah.
But who should we talk to next?
Well, I think that in Belgium we have a couple of young coaches who are promising and get the opportunity from their clubs to show themselves on the highest level. So unfortunately he was sacked, but he was coaching a top team, Karl Hoefkens, who was sacked in Bruges. It's certainly interesting. I think that the present coach of Union, who very recently still was a player, was assistant coach for two seasons and made the step with many question marks, but we are January and he's still competitive in the domestic competition, still in the National Cup, and he's still in Europa League for a young coach. And I admired his way of coaching, no nonsense, being simple. I think that it is supposed to be that as a young coach, you make some errors, but I see very few errors of him. And so that's Carl Gerhardt. And the third one, certainly maybe abroad, the best known, which is Vincent Kompany, who came straight from the pitch, I would say, to become a
even
a
had
coach.
Had a player coach role at player, one point.
Yeah, he was on the pitch and then suddenly he became himself a player coach. According to what I heard, one of the problems in Anderlecht was that he wanted to push his role further than only be the coach and compare it to the English model coach manager,
sure,
which was not accepted by the club. By the club, on the one side, on the other hand, it's not usual in Belgium to have that combination. In England, it's more likely. Vincent made some normal errors, coaching errors in the beginning, but I think that even in Anderlecht he already learned a lot, and he's proving now in Burnley in Championship, which is a very difficult competition, that he's really a promising guy.
Yeah.
So I think that one of these three guys will have more fresh ideas than mine.
I made fun of you that you were an old guy, but this is not an old discussion, for sure, for sure. Okay, well, maybe if you can help set one up, it would
I'll
be great. And then,
I'll do that.
Let's see if we can go talk to the next generation. Maybe that's a polite way to say it.
Yeah, let's keep it that way. Let's keep it that way.
Okay, Ariel, thank you very much. Thank you for listening to this episode of Inside the Coach's Room. Make sure to subscribe or rate us in your favorite podcast player, or share this episode on your social media, and we will make sure that you will get access to the best webinar that's available on our website. And if you have any questions, feel free to reach out to me on LinkedIn. I would be happy to connect.